You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Everybody, welcome back to Radio Rehab. It's good to be back on this Saturday morning, and hopefully we will bring you some information and some sharings that will benefit all of us that have to deal with substance abuse or co-occurring disorders in our families or community. Today we have incredible guests, as always, people that are willing to volunteer their time to come and share their stories with us and their experiences and their expertise. So before I introduce you to our panel today, I want to remind you, you can also get this show online if you go to www.1400amweoa.com. You can get this anywhere in the country. Jane's from Alaska, so her friends in Alaska can even hear us today. So anyway, for today's show, you know, I am privileged. It's an honor to work in the judicial system and with Judge Keith Meyer. What an opportunity it's been for me to be part of a judicial center that at one time looked like it wanted to lock everybody up and throw away the key. But now, under Judge Meyer's leadership, to be part of a program that doesn't want to lock people up. It wants to get people healthy and happy and back into a clean and sober lifestyle. So it's been an incredible journey to learn about how the law can help with people that are suffering from substance abuse issues. So Judge Meyer is here with us today to answer any concerns, legal concerns, or anything about his experience and how he came to even thinking about putting his neck out there to do a drug court program. And we have back with us Vance, who has been a loyal listener and true soldier in recovery. He's been clean and sober since August 18th, 2008. And he's going to share with us all about his life and how that happened. And Jane is back always with us to share in the discussion as well from her nursing and her recovering experience. So it's going to be a great show. Tune in. Don't hesitate to call 424-1400. Nothing's below the belt. You can ask any questions. We're going to have a great show today. We even have the judge's best friend here listening in the audience, but I'm not allowed to ask her any questions. So I am going to turn it over to Vance to share his story and get a discussion going then with the judge and with Jane. Hi, Vance. Thank you for coming.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back. I'd like to start off by saying I'm very, very grateful for the role that the judicial system has played in my recovery. At first, I was not grateful, as it is with many people. But over time, you learn to accept the things that you can't change. And also accept that most all the rules do really apply to me. Although that was a misconception when I first started. I was a bit confused which ones apply to me. Mm-hmm. Special.
Of course. Way. That's a tough one to digest, isn't it?
So it's great to be back here.
And what a neat opportunity to have the judge here with us, too. That was at one time your higher power. But anyway, Judge, you didn't know you were elevated to such a status in life, huh?
Well, I don't know at that time if he considered me his higher power.
Right.
If
right.
he did, it was to the extent I could put him in prison.
True, true.
Well, you know, when I first came in, it was tricky to accept. All of the aspects of the 12-step program and the drug court that is are required of a person when they're convicted of their third DUI, like I was. So you try to grasp the things that you know mean something. You know, there was a counselor, Mel C, and really, really means a lot to me, and I really. Thank him for all his guidance, as well as the judge. We met with him every 2 weeks, so really get to know him on a personal level, believe that with the participants in drug court, that really does mean a lot. It shows that, hey, people do care if you succeed.
Mm-hmm. So how in the world did you end up with three DUIs? I know drinking played a role. But
I haven't done one since I quit drinking.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It might have been the drinking. I don't know.
Well, I think when it started was pretty much the first time I was around alcohol. I was 16 and with a bunch of friends, and I started drinking, and it just made me feel all warm and fuzzy, and I really, really liked it, so I just kept drinking until dropped me off in my parents' front yard, and I woke up there the next morning. So I just thought that the purpose of drinking was to get drunk. Why do you do anything halfway? You know, and that's my personality. I don't do anything halfway, even mm-hmm. in recovery. I don't. I'm all or nothing, and now I'm just all or nothing in more positive aspects of life. That was where it really started. I was 20 years old and got my first DUI. And again, I think it was a lot of it deals with pride and wanting to be older than I was and that sort of thing. Of course, you know, at 20 years old, you're not supposed to be drinking, so I was acting older. Mm-hmm. I should have been, I guess. I got a DUI and didn't ask for help. Didn't call my parents, who were both professional people. They would be extremely embarrassed if their son had a brush with the law. You know, mm-hmm. that wasn't supposed to happen. So I went in front of a judge in a different county up north, northern Indiana. Pled guilty to a DUI after, you know, sitting there 3 days, and she said, well, you know, you sure you don't want a lawyer? Oh, no, I did it, you know. Well, you're going to go ahead and sit for another 30 days. So I did. I sat for 30 days on my first DUI because I was too proud to call my father and ask for financial assistance mm-hmm. for a lawyer. And that's something that I really, really still have to battle as pride.
Mm.
All of the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. You have to keep all of those right up front in your mind so you don't, when you're an extremist like I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing in the program, though. Once you come to that admitting stage, I mean, none of us, we all have, our characters are so similar, none of us wanted to ask for help, but in order to be successful in recovery, that's one of the first things we realize. We can't do it alone. We can't do any of it alone. Mm-hmm. You know, thank God for Bill and Dr. Bob, mm-hmm. and they made that perfectly clear, you know. I just love when I hear another recovering person put together all those things that, you know, you were proud, you didn't want to ask for help, and how it was before and what it's like now.
And what it's like now is absolutely fantastic. And whenever we do these Q&A sessions, I always can't emphasize enough about how amazing sober life is and how amazing working the steps in your life are. You know, I still have moments, but I recognize them, and I know what to do about those moments.
Judge, when you put together the drug court program, you were only the third DUI court in the state, actually. Nobody wanted to deal with, quote-unquote, the drunks. Why is that? And when you put together the DUI drug court, did you already understand that this is an illness and that locking them up wasn't going to do any good?
Several questions there.
Yeah,
going backwards, I guess. It my experience was, and statistically, the studies show that a person who gets an OVWI, if they do not have significant intervention, the likelihood of repeating that offense goes up geometrically. And that is a big problem. I had seen as a public defender and chief deputy prosecutor the people that just kept coming back and coming back and coming back.
But it's sort of interesting in that the public perception, and I think this is changing, but let's say 10 years or so ago, I think the public perception was, and to some extent still is, that, you know, drinking is okay. I mean, it's legal.
Yeah.
Alcohol is a legal drug.
Right.
So the public doesn't consider drinking as bad, even if you've got perhaps an addiction to the alcohol. But then, if you get in trouble, the public is extremely down on you mm-hmm. and wanting you to go to prison. Now, you compare that to the person who's addicted to drugs, and it's almost a reverse situation. The public looks very badly upon the drug addict, but then seems to understand more rehabilitating them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exactly sure why you have that sort of two different mindsets when you're actually dealing with the same problem, and the problem is addiction.
It's even in AA and NA, that invisible wall between the different mood-altering chemicals.
Well, yeah. And you know, it's funny because we've sort of seen it in drug court where the people who are there for alcohol offenses
mm-hmm.
May look a bit disparagingly upon the people that are there for drug offenses,
mm-hmm.
Which is was entirely new to me. I never conceived that until I saw it occur.
Yeah. Even the employees, I think, look
at
the drinker different than the druggie. Did you feel, Vance, as a repeat DUI, or that your drug of choice somehow was different than the down-and-out meth addict? Or
I did. You know, there were certain lines that I didn't want to cross, ethical, moral lines that I didn't want to cross, you know, through addictive behavior. Did I hang out with people that did drugs? Well, sure, you know, but there were certain things that I just wouldn't do. You know, I wouldn't put anything up my nose or in my vein or anything like that. But with the alcohol, you know, like Judge said, it's a legal drug, and you know, it's abused. In my opinion, it's abused far, far more than people would like to admit. You know, and that's one thing about these informational type shows that I'd like to really emphasize, that you know, for a long time I thought, well, maybe I have a drinking problem. Maybe. Maybe that's
maybe
the
just
problem.
A bad luck.
Yeah, you know, so you know, for the people, the listeners out there, if you feel that there might be an issue, go talk to somebody. Go talk to somebody in recovery. Go talk to a counselor. Or you know, there's many questionnaires that you can fill out or whatever, and be honest with those, because it's amazing when you're honest with yourself how good your life can get.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in denial about a person in your family or yourself being addicted to drugs or alcohol, it's never going to get better until it stops.
You know, nobody wants to admit that they're bodily different. That, you know, the bottom line is, be it whatever the substance is, be it meth, be it, you know, vodka, be it marijuana, whenever they put that substance in their body, that their life becomes unmanageable, that the outcome is unpredictable, that you lower the standard of what you would normally do. You know, and so many people still think it's a moral issue, and it's not a moral issue. Thank God that has been clarified in
I think people still
our society.
Struggle with that.
A lot of people struggle with the idea that it's a disease, and they think that it's more of a willpower issue.
Yeah.
You know, if I had more willpower, I wouldn't have been driving my kids around drunk, for sure. But it wasn't a willpower issue.
Yeah.
It was admitting that I was powerless. The thought was in my mind that I was going to drink that day, then I drank.
Right.
And then the outcome was unpredictable.
Well, and I think, like you all have said, you don't have to be alcoholic for alcohol to hurt you.
For sure.
But Vance, was you say go talk to somebody, even if it's an open AA meeting. You're going to know if you can identify in there if you go to a couple of open AA meetings. And Judge, you send people to AA that are that may not even be alcoholic yet, don't you? Or not you, but if it's recommended, you
well, if,
support
if it's recommended, I one of the big problems you have as a judge when these people come in front of you for a drug or alcohol violation is trying to determine whether or not they do in fact have a problem and the level of intervention that they need. There are a pretty large number of people actually that just made a bad choice. And they don't have a substance issue that really needs treatment, maybe some education, some cognitive behavioral sort of thing. And the system for years, if you came in on an alcohol charge, you had to go to AA meetings. Well, you know, that is not necessarily the best thing to do, because if these people do not have a problem, you're sending them and forcing them to go to a ton of meetings with people that do have a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's...
It could be counterproductive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you have to be careful as a judge and know who you're dealing with. And if you mm-hmm. don't, you're going to make mistakes. And those mistakes mm-hmm. may hurt that people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a judge, I'm sort of like a doctor, you know, do no harm. And you've got to be cognizant of that and really try to do no harm. But that is easier said than done, given the large volume of cases that judges are expected to handle now in very short periods of time, and really leaves many judges unable to devote the amount of time to each individual person that comes in front of them. Or even if they had the time, they might not have the economic resources because of the economic issues that are faced by government now.
Yeah, it's a tough call. But
along that line, I know we have to go to break in a second, but I was sentenced, Judge Meyer sentenced me, and during that sentencing, I can't quote, but I'll paraphrase, and basically saying, I think you've manipulated every judge and lawyer in your past, and because of your education well-dressed or whatever it was, but this time I'm not going to be manipulated. I believe you really, really have a problem and you really, really need help. And I was shocked. No one had ever called my bluff.
Wow, that was like a glass of water in that face.
It was very perceptive of him, but he's right. I had manipulated two other judges.
Yeah.
In the past, and you know, I don't see where you really have a problem, and we'll just do the minimum. Slap on the hand, and
he wasn't going to let your last name and good looks fool him.
You're mine for 3 years.
Well, there you go. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. That's a gift that people do give us, that moment of clarity, that honesty. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We will be right back. Just got a text from my friend Melinda in Florida, and her mother is in the hospital recovering from serious illness. So hello, Mommy Moses, from all of us here. Keep healing. Keep following the doctor's orders, and that's what we're talking about here today, how important it is to follow direction, even when there's an intervention, whether from a judge or, in Jane's case, it was her son. You have to follow the directions, even after the intervention. So I think maybe if the judge could share a little of his expectations after he sentences somebody to drug court, you guys, or when you get into a 12-step program, how do you continue after an intervention?
Well, I think that's part of the magic, if you will, of drug court, because of the constant contact that the judge and his staff have with the participants. We can force them to
do the next right thing, if you will, and to re-socialize. Many of these people, their socialization has suffered significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are some that have never socialized, at least in a positive way. That constant intervention by the judge and by the staff and the repeated accountability of the participants is really what helps them get better.
Mm-hmm.
It was my experience that the three phases in drug court are set up for a reason. You know, the first phase for me was 9 months. I went to a 12-step meeting every day for 9 months,
mm-hmm.
and then the second phase, 5 a week. The third phase, maybe 3 a week. And noticed on the third phase, I got to miss them, and I continued to try to go to more than 3 a week. When life is less demanding, I can do it. Sometimes it's tricky, but that's what really, maybe the third or the fourth month, I got my head hit over the head with the 2x4, and I said, okay. You know, these people have something that I want. These people that are all in recovery, they're happy, they smile, they've got a driver's license, they've got a car with insurance.
And a valid license.
These are things that were very far from my world at the time. So they all had attracted me with that. So the expectations... With the drug court, I was accountable for going to meetings. I was accountable for my actions. And everybody knew where I was 24 hours a day. And I needed that. And I had a little too much freedom. I've been self-employed for 13 years, and that allowed me the freedom to pretty much do what I wanted,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be drink on the job or just... A lot of freedom.
Yeah. So do you think some of the socialization the judge is talking about is learning to be responsible and accountable in a society's...
That's what I was getting
norms.
Ready to say. I mean, drug court has their own method, mm-hmm. which hopefully produces sobriety and healthy sobriety. If you don't come into sobriety by way of the judicial system, like me, once I came in and admitted that, I have a problem. And so now what do I do about it? You know, putting down the drink is really, really kind of elementary in staying sober, because mm-hmm. it's not so much the drink problem as it is to learning to live life on life's terms. And, it says if you have been to an AA meeting, one or two, it's read in every meeting. Rarely do we see a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and that requires rigorous honesty, which is what Vance has just alluded to. He was the master, as we all are, at lying and manipulating. I mean, that's how we stayed in our active addiction. I mean, we lied. We lied to ourselves that we didn't have a problem, A. And B, we lied to all of you guys to make you believe we didn't have a problem. So, once you get sober and you see what Vance just talked about, you see people living healthy lives. Mm-hmm. And we come to want what you have. I know, what do you want to do? I say, I go where she goes. I go where Lisa goes. And I see how she has maintained 30 years clean and sober. I mean, and is one of the happiest, healthiest, funniest people I know. And, that's what I want. And I don't want to go back to the way I lived.
Well, you both mentioned manipulation and dishonesty. And one of the things the judge and I, all of us, you all too, denial stands for don't even know I am lying.
Right.
It's not like you're blatantly deceiving the world. One of the things I've run into and probably the judge more than me, is some people really are dishonest people. It's like they really, even clean and sober,
constitutionally incapable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And when drug court started, it was for people like the Janes and Vances of the world. But now, we're seeing more antisocial that don't just have an addiction but have...
Well, because there's that blur.
And it's hard to know.
You know, with mental illness and addictions,
right.
I mean, they really do blur, for sure.
I know, and I know as a judge that's got to be a challenge, and I know assessing folks, I send them all to AA anyway, you all would too, but have you noticed that, Judge, too, that... Sometimes it's deeper than just the drink and the drug, dishonesty.
Not sometimes. Most times it's deeper. I mean, when we see the people in court, we're kind of at a convergence of addiction, mental health issues.
Personality disorders.
Personality disorders, socialization problems, environmental problems. Mm-hmm. All of these come together, and when we take someone into drug court, we're basically charged with unraveling that ball.
Yeah.
And getting rid of the things that we can as soon as we can, and the things that we know we can get rid of through treatment or what have you, then start working on those. And, you know, that's a tough combination.
Mm-hmm.
When a person has an addictive disorder and a mental health issue, and I think, and Lisa and I have talked about this a number of times, it's very difficult up front, at least for the lay person, to make a determination whether this person is doing what they're doing because of their mental health or they're doing what they're doing because of their addiction,
mm-hmm.
and how each of those play together. We often don't know for a number of months after a person is clean and sober what is what. And, you know, a lot of times the mental health or what would appear to be a mental health disorder will go away because it was directly tied to the addiction.
Yeah.
Then other cases we find that when the person's clean and sober, they still have the mental health disorder, which leads us to believe that they were self-medicating with alcohol and drugs. And so you really have to hit the mental health disorders, and treatment traditionally has not done very good at that. Last 5 years or so, treatment is more cognizant of that now, and they're trying to deal with the co-occurring disorders and a dual diagnosis at the same time or as close to the same time as they can, which is a major step.
Yeah.
And even when I say mental health disorder, I don't mean that people are just lunatics, you know.
Right.
They have mental health disorders, but many of those disorders are very treatable and very controllable. But you have to diagnose them and you have to get the requisite treatment for them.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, I don't care how bad of an addict or an alcoholic they were, they'll be good in recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the good news with drug court is it's at least 2 years in Judge Myers, so you're not considered full remission from an addictive disorder till you've been clean and sober a year anyway. And most of our folks, when we see them unraveling, it's around 9 months we start seeing some of the other stuff rear its ugly head. And then it's, now what? Thank God we have them again and can get them a jump start. Treat that.
Yeah, and Jane mentioned earlier about willpower, and you know, there's a lot of people, and you all in the recovering community know that a lot of people who get into AA and NA basically by willpower. I mean, they want to quit.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to come to that admission and accept help. And be sick and tired. I mean, you have to, you know, fortunately, people don't, in 2011, don't have to reach the bottom that society thinks. You don't have to be living under a bridge and drinking out of a brown paper sack in order to get well. You know, the bottoms are much higher now. But once you reach that, and it may be, you know, people may catch it in, like Lisa said, it may be a fleeting moment that find you at your first AA meeting. But once you get a belly full of it and you see that you don't have to live that way, hopefully it will save you from going all the way down or having to stand in front of you or having killed a family in a car accident or killed yourself or lost everything.
He always asks them if the willpower will work for diarrhea. That's about how it'll work with alcoholism. So judges, try your willpower next time you have some diarrhea. That'll work for your alcoholism real well too.
Let me know how that works.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
But you know what the drug and alcohol courts do, for whatever reason, you know, there's a fair number of people that don't have the willpower, and drug court. Or
gives
alcohol,
them some one power.
Well, it becomes their willpower. You know, it's forcing them to do it and to get through the initial shock of trying to get clean and sober. But then once they get through that, I mean, we see repeatedly that they do have willpower because they graduate from the program. They manage to stay clean and sober and for a number of years after that. I mean, we don't track them forever, so there are people who graduate from the program who will stay clean forever. And and I think one of those is probably Vance. And there's certainly a lot of other ones.
Forever is a big word to swallow, but tomorrow.
Today. So, absolutely.
And I show no signs of going back to that behavior. But on what Judge Meyer was saying about the co-occurring disorders, it's been my experience watching other addicts and alcoholics, and myself, that third DUI that I got, I wasn't over the legal limit of alcohol, but together with the prescription that I was on for my depression, which was prescribed to me by a doctor, therefore, I had every right to take it and drink on it and amplify all the effects.
Absolutely.
If
the doctor gave it to you, you have a right.
Exactly, you know. Was I depressed? Well, situational depression. I just went through a divorce as a direct result of my drinking, which it took a lot of time for me to say that openly.
To link the divorce to the drinking?
Yeah. I was the victim. None of it was my fault. But anyway, to watch people recover and their other disorders subside after they get off of all the self-medication, you know, and that the self-medication is, you know, when you don't have the money or the insurance to go to a doctor, but you have the money to go to the liquor store.
Yeah.
You know, it's a viable option, at least you think it is. You know, I'll just run away from it in this way. And on that running away, you know, that's what so many people, I believe, who drink and drug themselves into oblivion, they don't know how to deal with their feelings.
Yeah.
They don't know how to deal with situations. At least my experience was I was running away from situations and how I felt and how those situations made me feel because I wasn't equipped to deal with those situations in a healthy manner. Lisa does a lot of counseling, and I wish when at 16 I had my best friend die, and how I got through that was alcohol. You know, me and my friends and I stole a case of whiskey from Mom's dad.
Numbed out.
And we were numb. And so throughout the 20-year of my drinking span, whenever somebody would die, it was a month, two, three-month binge.
So grieving was a real trigger for you. Yeah. Loss.
Exactly. And in sobriety, I've lost more people that were closer to me than I did prior to. But I've dealt with it the healthiest way that I know how. In praying, talking to my sponsor, talking it through with a lot of people, actually feeling the emotion, feeling it, and go through the five steps of grief in a healthy manner rather than running away from it. You know, running away from it when you're sober up and stuff.
Lisa always says, you take the alcohol away from the alcoholic, and you're only left with ick, you know? and that's because we did, I mean, that alcohol was our solution for good times and bad times, for happy times and sad times. That was, at least it was mine. I didn't know how to celebrate without adding liquor into the equation. I didn't know how to grieve without having liquor in the equation. I didn't know how to be mad without liquor being in the equation. You know, those are all life skills that, for some reason, I missed. And in recovery, I beg anyone to say that you go into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't learn to deal with pretty much every situational problem that can happen in life. I see people survive a spouse's suicide and not drink. I see people get fired and not have to drink. I see people have to bury children and not have to drink. I see people get tremendous promotions and not have to drink. Mm-hmm. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the most powerful key to my sobriety in my life. And it has put me in touch with just tremendous pillars in this society that do it with grace and dignity. And
you know, I think like the judge and others now see this AA thing works for people. You can't knock success.
Oh, I'm really impressed with the results I see out of AA. I think everybody ought to belong to it or have a home group.
Yeah.
You know, it really does a great deal for the people who are actively participating. I realize a lot of people at AA are only there because some judge told them to go there.
That's
to
okay.
Some probation officer or something like that.
AA can handle it.
They get a taste of it.
And you know, some of those people will actually wake up and get into AA. Others won't. You know, the experience is good. There's a lot of good lessons to learn. And, and the thing that, one of the things that impresses me about the people who are active in AA is they are very honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're some of the most honest people that I know, which is good. I mean, you know, everyone should be that way. Unfortunately, most of us aren't.
Yeah, true. Well, we have to have AA to keep us that way. Right. Alone. What's that line, alone in our own heads, like going in a ghetto? You don't want to go in there after dark, and you don't want to go in alone. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're going to take a break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Judge Keith Meyer from Warwick County and Vance and Jane talking about recovery. We're having a great discussion with Judge Meyer, Vance, and Jane about recovery and about the different kinds of interventions and the process of what needs to happen even after you eliminate the drink and the drug from your life. And at break, we were just talking about, you know, what does make some people grasp this thing and then others not? Do you wonder sometimes, Judge, when you're sitting at that bench, is this person going to respond? Or I guess you can't even go there with people, but
I wonder that a lot, because when I see a person who has been subject to intervention and it's just not clicking, you know, I scratch my head and think, what are we doing wrong? You know, and I always approach it, if we have a relapse in the program, I don't approach it as the participant had the problem. I mean, they did, but what I look at is, what are we doing wrong?
Right.
You know, we need to be acting differently with respect to this person.
True.
Because there is something that will work, we just haven't discovered it yet.
I do too, especially after that initial 90 days. Like, what are we... Did we not miss, if there's a breakup or they're living with somebody using, there's always these triggers, it seems.
Well, life continues to happen, but, you know, we see it in meetings all the time, people with long-term sobriety that go back out.
And,
you know, for me, it's just a really good reminder that, you know, that I remember every day in my, you know, whatever your higher power is, one of the first things I say when my eyes pop open is, you know, I reintroduce myself to my higher power and I'm an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to forget that today. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think it's anything that you're missing when you say, what is it that we miss when somebody relapses? You know, there's the three things, A, that, you know, I cannot manage it, you know, B,
God
couldn't would
if he
were sought. You know, it's
the three pertinent ideas.
The three pertinent ideas. Right.
Yeah.
People sometimes will hold out for years thinking that someday, after a long period of sobriety, that they can drink like other people. And if you still have that lurking notion, you know.
Danger.
There's a saying that in AA is there's nothing worse than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. Mm-hmm. And I've watched people, you know, and Judge, you were saying earlier that, you know, if I've sentenced somebody to AA meetings, then maybe I'm doing them harm. And I would like to just say that maybe if they're ever in a situation again that they're bordering on addictive drinking or drugging or whatever, that those words are going to kick in, the ones that they heard in AA, those will say, you know, well, maybe, you know, 4 years ago that when I was going to meetings, maybe that one guy who said this, mm-hmm. here I am doing this again, you know. So it might be preventative. Mm-hmm. Preventative care.
And I always tell people when I assess them and they're like, that judge is making me go to AA. I'm like, look at it this way. Maybe someday you're going to love somebody that needs AA. And mm-hmm. this gives you a front door mm-hmm. in of understanding mm-hmm. what AA is about. And usually they've had it in their family anyway. So go learn about alcoholism, even if it doesn't apply to you at this time.
I know in my recovery, I've seen couples come in and the spouse come in as a support person, and lo and behold, that spouse is shown back up treating their own addiction.
Yeah. Look at the people we've seen come in through Al-Anon that thought, oh, my problem is I'm married to an Al-Anon, and they come in and realize, oh, I had some problems too.
So. I know we spend so much money trying to treat it, but really, it's educating. I mean, it's really just people go into the schools. I mean, Lisa, you are just like so phenomenal at trying to, you know, carry the message and show people that, you know, alcoholics look like you and I, you know, and because there is that stigma attached. Who wants to go out and say,
there really is,
I'm an alcoholic? Because society at large thinks that, you know, we are really the plethora of...
Do you see that in the law enforcement, judicial, prosecutorial world still, Judge? Because I know a lot of our guests here have felt they're discriminated against by law or by the judges.
I guess I see two things. One is what Janie sees, and then there's another group of people that thinks it's funny. They think a drunk is funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are for a little bit.
They probably are.
We were all a hell of a lot of fun. You should have known us then. You should have known us in the early days.
They're fun and funny.
Right, right.
But the reality is, it's sad.
Yeah, it is. It's pathetic. There's a ring of sadness in that laughter.
Oh, they're for sure. For sure.
Where do you all think we need to go as brothers and sisters and guardians of the community?
Carry the message. And when the opportunity arises, you know, be the big book that somebody may not otherwise get an opportunity to see. Mm-hmm. You know, I know for me, that's the only way that I can stay sober is staying close to the program, hanging out with people like me. And when I have an opportunity to say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic too, and to kind of break that taboo. It just happened in my dad's hospital room just yesterday. And, the opportunity happens. And, you know, if we can identify, I'm a recovering person, and it keeps me sober, for sure.
Yeah.
If I get too far away from you guys, I get crazy.
Me too.
If someone were to have said to me 5 years ago that the highlight of my day would have been going to an AA, and I sincerely, it is. Some days it is the highlight of my day. But to the people out there who are still practicing their addictions, you know, I was addicted to the bars as much as I was addicted to the alcohol, that social life, the drama, the, you know, he's with her, and by the end of the night, he's not with her, and she's with the other guy, you know, and the fights, and the, you know, and
all that excitement.
And it's so unhealthy.
Sobriety can be boring at first when you're used to that level of heightened.
But now I feel that what did I do with all that time that I had that I was drinking? Mm-hmm. Now I can work. work 16 hours a day, and there's still stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no alcohol involved, so there's just not enough time in the day. Why would I want to sacrifice my time to something that's going to do nothing but hurt?
Yeah.
Again and again, and just to, you know, the people that do go back out after, you know, being in AA for a while, they'll be back. They come back quite often.
Right.
You know, and so it's just you forget. I think people forget where they were. I have daily reminders of where I was at one time. And I need to keep those close to me. You know.
Lisa, you asked, where do you think we need to go for the judicial system, or the, actually not just judicial system, for the justice system in the country? I think what we need to, the people that are in that system need to realize that if you really do not understand the problem, be very careful about how you deal with it. Because you will make the wrong decision. And don't be afraid to admit that, you know, I really don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you need to pass it off. If you're a prosecutor, for example, and you've got a person with what you think may be a bad addiction, find out and have someone, a professional, tell you what is the best response to this person. Same for a judge, same for a probation officer. You know, you got to know what you're dealing with and then know how to deal with it properly. And I've gone through a tremendous amount of training on drugs and alcohol, but there are still times when I am stumped. You know, I don't know everything. That's why I have Lisa, because I expect her to know everything.
Oh, great. And I don't either.
And I go to her, and you know, her knowledge level's above mine, so that helps. And there's sometimes that we have an issue that's even above hers. And at that point, you take the best shot at it.
That's really good. That's a really good perspective.
Both of you touched on this, is surrounding yourself with positive people who bring out the best in those around them. And it's a good thing I said about a month ago at a talk is I believe we're a common culmination of the five closest people to us. So you make sure those are really good people.
So, a high five, for sure.
So, you know, you try to surround yourself with ethical, honest, open people. And, you know, just ask why is it that the honesty level in AA is so high? It's because I'm only as sick as my secrets. So I had a client tell me that a week ago. It's like, she said, you're like an open book. And I try to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have anything to hide.
It shocks people sometimes.
Yeah, it's so weird when we lived our life just like so busy, a cat covering up. You know, that's how we lived our lives, and now it's just it's so freeing to be able to just go, you know, I don't have any secrets. You want to look at my phone? You want to, I mean, have at it.
We need to come back and have another discussion with you three, maybe before we even leave today, how we could help the younger people, because we're seeing a lot more in their roaring 20s coming in, and that's just a whole different challenge for us and their mindset. They, isn't it, Judge?
My theory is
they would have never gotten in their 20s.
Quick.
Yeah, at least get a start. Right. Do some radiation, and then if it doesn't stay in remission, at least you did treat it. That's true.
There are a lot of young people in recovery, and they're trying to do bridge groups to start meetings for the teens and the 20s.
I know there's people, a couple midnight meetings.
That's the other idea that people have, is that it's, you know, old men. There are so many young people and so many women in recovery. It's not that stereotypical picture. If you go to an AA meeting, they look like we look sitting around this table. Every cross section is represented.
Yeah.
Dealing with the young people is just an incredible challenge. I mean,
you know, the studies have shown people under age 25 don't even have adult thinking. You know,
right.
The frontal cortex their cerebral cortex isn't developed. And so you're actually dealing with a moving target all
right.
the time.
And if they've been drinking and drugging, they're still 15 emotionally.
Well, yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just tremendous issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say you shouldn't try to do something
right,
about it. We
right.
need to do something about
right.
it. So when they get to be 25 and 30 and 40, we're not dealing with them still.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure there are a lot of things that can be done, but we're certainly not there yet.
Yeah. We know it's a need, that's for sure. Well, we've got to wrap up. Any last minute leaving parts of wisdom?
I just believe, my experience here recently, that life is too short to live in your own prison.
Mm.
So people need to free themselves.
Mm, thank you. Yeah, that's a worse prison than the prison the judge sends us to. Keep that freedom an inside job.
And I would say, don't be judgmental, be understanding.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good one.
Open-minded.
Yeah. Yes.
And if anybody's out there who's suffering and has that question, whether or not they have a problem, AA is everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are 160, 70 meetings a week in the Evansville area,
yeah.
And it's effectively free. And you
oh,
would
yeah,
be
there's,
welcomed.
There's
yeah.
AA in Boonville now every day, NA. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely for the Radio Rehab audience, do call here, Radio Rehab. You could call Judge Meyer. He's always said that, Superior One in Warrick County. You could call us at Drug Court. You could call Vance or Jane, and we'll hook you up for sure. And try. If we don't have the answers, we'll try to get you somewhere where you can get some answers. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you all for coming. We should come back and talk about the young people and get some of your ideas as well for the next show. Don't forget Radio Rehab between now and next Saturday to do the next right thing.